When I was about 11 years old, my parents began to introduce me to the concept of buying things with my own money. As an 11-year-old, you can imagine the challenge that is because you have no money. My parents didn't give us an allowance. We were expected to help with chores, you know, mowing the yard, taking care of the trash, weeding the garden, those sort of basic things that we had, because you were just expected to as part of the family. So in order to earn any spending money, I had to work for other people. As an 11-year-old boy, that usually meant mowing yards in the summertime, which was equally challenging because we kind of lived out in the country, not in a subdivision. It wasn't great money, and as I said, seasonal. It's mostly just summer work. So I thought long and hard when I did earn any money what I was going to spend that hard-earned money on. And for some reason, I don't remember now why, I settled on a toy die-cast metal tractor. This thing had caught my eye in a store, and that's what I wanted. I remember the cost of that toy tractor being around $15, which was not cheap back then, at least especially for a little boy. And on top of having to earn my own spending money, my parents also expected us boys to tithe on money that we earned. And I saw that as a serious handicap. To a young boy with limited earning potential, every time I got, say, 50 or 70 cents, 75 cents or whatever for some yard work, I knew that I had to set aside 20% of it, 10% for God's tithe and 10% for the feast. The feast tithe wasn't so bad because that was money being saved up that I could spend on myself at the feast. But still, so in essence, for every dollar, in my mind, I was sort of losing 20 cents off the top. So that meant it took time to save up for this tractor. And there are several factors, though, that mitigated any disappointment that I might have had. First was that I realized, even at that age, my parents were not asking me to do something that they weren't doing themselves, that they modeled what they wanted me to do, and my brothers as well. The second was that even on those paltry sums, as I saw them even then, I saw the fruits of doing what God asked me to do. As I mentioned, the festival tithe was for me to come before God, especially the Feast of Tabernacles, where you can enjoy things you might not normally have access to through the year. But it took me all spring and summer to earn enough money to buy that toy tractor. But the day that I had enough money and I asked Mom and Dad to take me to the store to get it, I still remember that day, how impressed that was on my memory, because it was something that I earned. I was less aware of many other powerful lessons learned in having to earn that money, but primarily it was the physical and special and spiritual blessings that come from tithing. And that's what we're going to talk about today and consider and answer just one question. Why is tithing important? Could we explain, any one of us, could we explain to someone unfamiliar with tithing the answer to that question? Why is it important? Well, let's begin in Deuteronomy 14, Scripture, and let's consider some principles. My message today is less about the mechanics, if you will, of tithing. I'll touch on a little bit of that here in a moment, but more to the point of the principle and the perspective. So in Deuteronomy 14 and in verse 22, we have this recorded for us. In fact, the whole balance, the end of this chapter, maybe in your Bible it says tithing principles. But just to read verse 22, it says, "You shall surely or truly tithe all of the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year." All of your increase. And he says, "You shall surely tithe." So the simple answer as to why should we is because God says so. And while that may be challenging, especially on a human level, or if you're a little 11-year-old boy trying to earn money, that's maybe not a very good answer or not enough of an answer. But it's interesting to note that one of the few things that Bible scholars will agree upon is that tithing is clearly laid out in Scripture, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and it is nowhere seemingly contradicted. We'll touch on some of those things as we progress as well. But for the sake of clarity, let me review some of those basics, if you will. Tithing, or specifically the word tithe, in the English simply means to give or take a tenth of. So it's easily calculated on a number system based on 10. For every 10, you take one out. God is a very generous God, and in this case, only asking for a tenth of the increase, not of all of the money, the increase, which is a fine distinction, but an important one. Whether that increase is the form of a harvest or property or income, the principle is the same. God expects us to tithe, first and foremost, as recognition of him being creator and possessor of all. For instance, I can create, and I do, almost all of the work that I do outside of personal conversations, I create on a computer. Mr. Schmidt was talking about things to be thankful for. I'm thankful for computers. It would take me so much more time to do the things that I do, and it would make things so much more challenging. But we have these tools, and everything that I create on the computer that is part of my responsibility, while I create the items from that, I didn't create the materials that allow me to create those things. Right? I didn't go out and create the computer chips. I didn't create the glass. I didn't create the plastics. I didn't create the metals. I didn't create any of that. And mankind can do great things with what's provided. Again, Mr. Schmidt talked about all the things that we could be appreciative for. All of those things were created by somebody, weren't they? Those physical things, especially, that we enjoy anyway. And scientists can even do things like splice genes, but they can't create genes. They can't create the base genetic material that makes life possible. So all that we use to live, all that we use to enjoy life, all that exists came or comes from God in the first place. And for the use of all that he's created, God simply asks for a tenth in part back as usage fee, to put it a little bit crudely, right? It's the service fee. We're all aware of those things. But it's not onerous, and we'll talk about more of that as well as we progress from. But we're here in Deuteronomy. Let's go back to chapter 8. Let's look at some of these verses that talk about what I've just touched on here in terms of God creating wealth and tithing. So in Deuteronomy 8 and verse 18, we have here for us reminders, as this book is known for. And the reminder here is that they should not only not forget God, but the perspective of what he provides. So Deuteronomy 8, verse 18, "You shall remember the eternal your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day." The power to get wealth. And wealth is an interesting thing. We can look at nations like this nation, certainly, that was given so many resources. I mean, we have access to materials like uranium. We have metals, aluminum, steel, copper, iron, that many parts of the world don't have access to in the same way. We have one of the highest percentages of fresh water in the world contained within this nation. So many resources that you can generate and use to create wealth. But that's not just the only way, isn't it? There are nations like Saudi Arabia before the 1930s. There wasn't anything there but a lot of sand. And then they discovered oil. Right? So wealth is there. Wealth is often there when even we don't know it. God says, "I'm the one that gives you the ability to create these things and use it." And so by extension, then, the act of tithing, we are in effect worshiping God. And to the point of this time of year here in this country, we should be reminded to be thankful for these things. We acknowledge God as the source of our existence. We acknowledge his providence and his blessings that he gives us. For the sake of time today, if you want to just write in your notes, a couple of verses I'll reference here to you. One of my favorite is Haggai 2, verse 8, where God simply says, "The gold is mine. The gold and silver is mine." That's straight wealth, isn't it? If somebody gave you a bar of gold, you would know exactly what that's worth. A lot. that you could exchange it directly for things, can't you? You take it somewhere and sell it. It can be used in many ways. Exodus 19, verses 5 to 6 is very similar, but God expands it out and he says, the earth is mine. Everything that we have, everything that we know of, God created. And then even in Psalm 50, verses 7 through 11, a longer discourse there, is simply the same point where God says, in summary, all is mine, everything is mine. And in selecting Israel to be a model nation, when he first began to work with them, what God had hoped to accomplish was to show them directly, in part, lasting blessings come through obedience. And that through obedience, they could begin to take on his holiness. They were to be the example of that to the world around them. But that holiness is an interesting aspect. So let's look at that in Leviticus 27. And let me sort of skip ahead and just simply say, have you ever thought about your ties as being holy? Leviticus 27 and verse 30, we have this recorded for us. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, it is the eternal's. It is holy to the eternal. So no matter what it is, and it's not limited to just these two things that are mentioned here, as we rehearsed, as I referenced in these other verses, it's consistent through Scripture that everything that is God's, when we tithe on it, that is holy. So a tithe is not meant to be used for what we want it to be used for, even in terms of second tithe. It's not just that we can go to the feast and we have all this extra money we can spend on whatever. Do we think about spending it in ways that reflects the holiness of what that money represents? So it's not to be borrowed. We'll come back to that thought. If you do, you have to pay a 20% surcharge. Now, why would anybody do that is the question. Well, what if I have a lamb that I see that is especially special, right? The genetics just lined up. This is a lamb that can drop twins every time it's pregnant. You know, the wool is the best quality. Everything about this lamb is top-notch. And I don't want to tithe on that. That was the first lamb, maybe, of the herd, and I was supposed to tithe on it. Well, I could keep that, but then I'd have to add 20% to it. That's a pretty serious consideration then, isn't it? If I want to use something that was to be given to God first and foremost. But again, do we consider our tithes holy? Unfortunately, I've known people that have taken, say, second tithe money especially, and maybe something happens right before the feast. There's some emergency. And they say, I don't have the funds for this. And so then they take their second tithe, and then they're left without money to get to the feast. So let's look at another verse along this line in terms of God's ownership, if you will. In Job 41, God says, essentially, everything I created on this planet came from me. We can acknowledge that. We have no idea how that happened. Because he did it on a spiritual level, right? With his power, with his spirit, he created all. But in Job 41, it's even expanded out beyond that. In verse 11, we have recorded for us God saying or speaking to Job here, who has preceded me that I should pay him? So it's not just that there's an exchange, right? That there's a requirement or a usage fee, as I say earlier. It's recognition of ownership. God says, so who is there before me that I would need to pay him? He says, everything under heaven is mine. Now, not just what we consider the heaven in terms of the universe. This is talking about everything under his throne, where he is his. Tithing, then, is also about not losing sight of God's sovereignty and that he owns all. He made all. But let's back up and touch on the point that I made that most scholars don't argue, if you will, the point of tithing. Let's go back to Genesis 14 and see an example. We'll actually look at two examples here of individuals who tithed. And the first example is Abraham in Genesis 14. Beginning in verse 17, to sort of break into the thought, this is the outcome, if you will, of when Lot and the other cities in the valley, where Sodom and Gomorrah and those other city kingdoms were, they had been taken captive. Abraham takes his men, he goes out, he rescues them. So this is as he comes back. Genesis 14, verse 17, it says, "The king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Sheba," that is the king's valley, "after his return from the defeat of Caledoraloma, and the kings who were with him." So verse 18, "And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High." Now, we'll not get into this at any length, but if you go to Hebrews, we're given insight here that this Melchizedek was the pre-incarnate Christ. So it says, "He," that is Melchizedek, "blessed him," that is Abraham, "and said, 'Blessed of Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand.'" God delivered the enemies of Abraham into his hand. And so then it concludes verse 20 there, "And he gave him a tithe of all." He gave him a tithe of everything. If you read on further, it was a tithe on everything Abraham had, not all the spoils, because he gave those back to the kings. It was his increase, wasn't it? If we go then next to chapter 28, Genesis 28, and in verse 20, we have here the record of Jacob tithing. To begin again in verse 20, it says, "Jacob made a vow, saying, 'If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone, which I have set as a pillar, shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you.'" What I find especially interesting in these two examples is that all of this predated what we call the Sinaitic covenant, right? The covenant made with Israel at Sinai with Israel and God. So it predates what many claim is the law. But some will view tithing, in spite of these things, as God wanting to limit our wealth, our income. And perhaps some of you have heard or seen that, unfortunately, in some of the upheavals in our church history going back about 30 or so years ago. I heard people say God's way of life is burdensome. And I even had interaction with a family many, many years ago in another part of the country who had left during that time. And in the course of leaving, one of the things they forsook was tithing. And I found it very illustrative that by doing that, it set them on a course of poor financial decisions. They made decent money, solid, probably middle class, maybe a little lower middle class, but they weren't a large family, husband, wife, two boys, but they never had enough. And they regularly came to the church for assistance, which we gave. But at some point, then you have to realize this is not just one-offs. There's a pattern here. And so I sat down with them to go through a budget. That's always a very uncomfortable conversation because they have to acknowledge they don't have much money. And so you look at what they're paying for rent and utilities and food and such, and it's obvious they don't have enough to cover everything. But then the conversation came to tithing. And some would say, well, as they did, well, I don't have enough money to tithe. I can't afford to tithe, is what the husband said to me. My response was, you can't afford not to tithe. I said, I don't know how God will do it, but he promises blessings when we follow his instruction. Tithing certainly is one of them. I said, in some way, at some point, he will bless you. This individual worked for the state, and in considering his financial position, he wanted to try to find a position that would pay more money. And he was trying to do that in the state so he didn't lose all the years of service towards his retirement. that he had already invested in working for the state. So he was applying within the state system. He'd apply for everything that looked similar to the job description and the job title, if you will, category that he had. And he would get interviews. He would get sometimes second interviews, and then everything would just disappear. And you can imagine the frustration. I encouraged him to continue trying. And then he found another position. And he wasn't real sure about the position because it was a pretty lateral move. But he realized in looking into it, even though it was only a minor increase in salary, it moved him from a metropolitan area to a more rural area of the state, which in effect became a bonus. Because now his housing is less expensive, his food, his utilities, his car costs, everything dropped. And the net effect was he had more disposable income. And it shows the power of God's blessings. Many of you are probably familiar with this. If you try to explain tithing to someone unfamiliar with it, their reaction is probably very similar to this husband. How can I do that? Right? How can I tithe? And you say, oh, but wait, there's more. There's also the tithe for the feast. Wait, what, 20%? Oh, but every third year, there's a third tithe. What? And yet I even remember the story of my parents as they began attending church, and as you back then especially counted your third tithe year. So it was the third year after they had been attending. And so that year they were going to set aside this additional 10%. And in having conversations with different individuals at church, they were encouraged to keep track, if you will, of all the blessings that would happen that year that could not be explained in any other way. And so they decided they would. And I remember them having a notebook, and occasionally, usually at dinner time, they would talk about these things. They would write something down. And it was amazing how many things just showed up. Dad started winning contests that year. It's like your random things. You know, you go into the store, fill out this card, and you can win a free whatever it was, you know. And he would win these things. But it was even other things that less tangible. You know, the car didn't break down as much. Or you didn't have these unusual expenses or unplanned for expenses. You'd have more in the garden, you know, just all these kind of things. And God's way of life is not about punishment, ever. He doesn't seek to restrict us for his pleasure. But what tithing shows, again, however, is how willing are we to put him first? Right? That tithe, if we get income increase, the tithe should be the first thing that we consider with that money, because the blessings flow from that. And again, I saw those blessings. You know, we're spoiled. Another blessing we have is with the advance of technology. Cars are much more dependable now than they were 50 years ago. I still remember before the Feast of Tabernacles, and they drove much further distances back then, 1,000 miles or more. There would be work parties. Everybody, all the men would bring their cars. They would gather at somebody's house. They would pull up in the yard. Everybody would get out their tools, and they would grease bearings, and they would change oil, and they would do a tune-up, all these various things, because you didn't know what you'd have along the way. And actually, I remember a lot of people bought certain cars because they knew if they were traveling and it broke down, those were very common cars they could go to the junkyards and get parts for, because even parts stores were not as common back then. So cars that lasted. And I'll tell you one more story before we progress further. The account that I heard of we call them spiritual widows. I think you know what that means. A woman that attends, whose husband either doesn't attend or has died. In this case, this woman had a husband who was very antagonistic against the church. And he didn't even really give her any money to tithe on, that she could go to the feast. But she would save what she could, and she was always hoping to go, but rarely was she able because of his restriction. And one year he relented, and she was just ecstatic, as you can imagine. She was so thrilled. She was going to be able to drive to the feast. And so she plans, she prepares, she packs, she gets ready to leave that day, and he thought he was going to sabotage her. She's not a mechanic, he figured. She won't know what's going on. So he went out to the car, and he took off the coil wire. So on the older model cars, you had a coil wire that was the master for firing the other spark plugs, right? It was the timing. Without the coil wire, you're going to get no spark. You're going to get no combustion. You're not going to get any movement out of the car. It's dead. So he sees her pack up. She says goodbye. She's all happy and excited. She gets out. He gets in the car, and it fires up. She heads off to the feast. And he doesn't know what to think about all this. You know, this is no cell phone time period. He has no way to contact her until she gets there and decides to call home. And the whole week goes by, 8 days. He's probably beside himself. He's not hearing her. She's not calling in a panic. Car won't run. She comes home. She pulls in the driveway, happy to see him. She takes her stuff in the house. He shuttles out to the car real quick, pops the hood. No coil wire. The whole feast. She went, she drove, she came home. I think because she had the desire to go to God's feast using tithe money. And he blessed her for that. I saw it with my parents. I've seen it with many, many people, as I mentioned. The blessings of things that you couldn't plan otherwise. The protection even that we get at times. And I know many of you have your own stories to share. But let's go next to Matthew 23. Because how we view tithing is also important. I mentioned about it honoring God, that it's holy, but our attitude in doing those things makes a difference as well. And this is part of what the Pharisees missed in their worship before God. It had become so rule-based that they lost honoring God. They lost the aspect of taking on his holiness in everything, but tithing even. So in Matthew 23, and in verse 23, we read this, and as a quick aside, if you want to do an interesting Bible study tonight, just a real quick thing, go through this chapter and notice how many times God says, woe to you. That's not just an, oh, by the way. It's a sharp rebuke. Right? So in verse 23, he says to them, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you're hypocrites. So that word in the Greek is what we get our word actor from. Right? You're pretending. You're living a lie. You pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin. Has anyone seen those seeds? Yes, no? If you haven't, they are minuscule. They are tiny, tiny, tiny. How do you pay tithe on mint and anise and cumin? They would count them out. Can you imagine the hours it took? Here's my approach. I would put it on a scale. I would divide it by three. I would nudge a little bit more and say, there we go, right? Because the point is not literally a tenth. The point is, am I going to do it the way God says to honor him? So he says, you've done this and you've neglected the weightier matters of the law. What are those? Justice, mercy, and faith. But notice what he says. He doesn't say you should have done justice and mercy and faith and not worried about tithing. Actually, he says, these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Right? So however you read that, you should have tithed without leaving justice, mercy, faith undone, or you should have done justice, mercy, faith, not leaving tithing undone. In either case, he says, tithing's good. You're just missing the next steps. So Christ didn't do away with it. He had clear opportunity to. He could have released mankind from the quote-unquote burden of tithing. But rather, he confirmed that it's part of the weightier matters of the law. But we can tie that of habit if we're not careful. I'm not saying that we don't get to a point where we don't think about things as much as we might have earlier. Right? For many years of my life, I really had to pay attention to when sundown was because my job was regularly bumping up against that on Fridays, especially with the career field I had. But while I don't purposely plan to break the Sabbath anymore, I don't have to worry about that in the same way, right? With my responsibility, Alexa reminds me when sundown is because I've asked her to do that. But it's not the same, isn't it? So that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that we don't think about it. I still think about the Sabbath when it comes. I still think about tithing. But not the same way, because it's just part of who I am now. but we still should honor it. And this is part, again, of what the Pharisees missed, what they forgot. They thought tithing, amongst many other things that they did, was the righteousness. Right? So I could tithe grudgingly, can't I? Is that the same as tithing with a cheerful heart? No, they're not in the same category, and we'll come to that here next. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 9. We will oftentimes read this on a holy day, especially when we're taking up offerings, but it's not relegated only to that time period because it's a principle. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7, Paul says, "Let each one of you give as he purposes in his heart." But we know what tithing is. So this is talking about offerings, but we can still apply it to tithing. Purposes as he gives in his heart. I purpose to give a tithe. I purpose to set aside a second tithe, a third tithe when that comes around. But he says, notice, but not grudgingly or of necessity. It's just another bill I have to pay. That we shouldn't look at it that way. Notice why. He says, for God loves a cheerful giver. God not only requires that we tithe, he wants us to tithe with a willing heart. He wants us to see these other aspects of it. So we do it not only cheerfully, but willingly, and in anticipation of what God will bring from it. Notice in verse 8, as we continue here, it says, "And God is able to make all grace abound towards you." Now, the word grace, we can get tripped up on because of how it's used in mainstream Christianity. But for the purposes of this message today, and it's not using the word improperly, think of this word as graciousness. Right? So God is able to make all graciousness abound to you. Right? So we read Deuteronomy earlier, referenced Haggai, and the references in Psalm there about God owning everything. How gracious is God to you? How gracious is God to me? To be able to not only enjoy these things, but to be able to participate in this way. To continue, he says, always having all sufficiency in all things. And I have to say, in the times, even when I was unemployed and we didn't know when I was going to have a paycheck next, as I was feverishly sending out resume after resume, many, many times in my career, we never starved. The bills got paid somehow. Things still were taken care of. Always having sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance in every good work. And then especially in those moments, then to reflect on these principles and to realize what I was learning even beyond tithing, aspects again of God's holiness, faithfulness, his blessings, and so many things. Let me read to you next an excerpt from our fundamental belief statement on tithing. We say this: we believe in tithing as a way of honoring God with our sustenance and as a means of serving him in the preaching of the gospel, the care of the church, attending festivals, and helping the needy. Tithing is very much a fundamental part of being a true Christian, and so many spiritual blessings are predicated on the acceptance and application of this doctrine. But as I've mentioned, tithing is also an aspect of learning to take on God's holiness. Let's conclude then in Psalm 100. I had this in my Sabbath thought last night. I won't embarrass you asking for a show of hands of how many read it. But we're going to read the whole chapter today. It's 5 verses. Psalm 100, verse 1. Make a joyful shout to the Eternal, all your lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Eternal, he is God, and he has made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise, and be thankful to him and bless his name. For the Eternal is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations. Do we think of this even when we tithe? We tithe because God asks us to, as I mentioned at the beginning, but also because we're reminded of what he does and what he provides for us. Tithing is necessary for us to humanly be part of something. When you put money into it, it raises the involvement, doesn't it? But it also shows that we have a part, that we're not just passive observers. We're called to be part of a work that God is doing that has started 2,000 years ago and even beyond that, but stretches into eternity. And so tithing has always been a part of God's way of life, and suspect in some form or understanding it will be for the rest of eternity. If you've not read in some time the Fundamental Belief booklet, I would encourage you to go back and read the section on tithing. We even have a book itself covering tithing to get up to speed if we've not read that in some time. But again, to be reminded of these things, of honoring God and taking on His holiness and recognizing that we owe everything to Him. So whether we tithe on a lawn mowing job or whether we tithe on a regular paycheck, let's remember why we are to tithe.